This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the show, Saturday, April 12th, 2014. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Timmy Debenham, and Michael Remus. And this segment's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is proper fitting, custom-made mouthguard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Guys, last segment we broke down the possible matchup, and it appears the matchup's going to be the Rangers-Flyers. This segment we're going to talk about possible, and emphasis on possible, matchup of the Pittsburgh Penguins against the Columbus Blue Jackets or the Detroit Red Wings. And so I can explain this to you, as it currently stands, we could have actually had a matchup set as of last night, but of course the Columbus Blue Jackets and Detroit Red Wings both lost yesterday. So as
nobody wants it.
Yeah, both lost games at the Ottawa of one. As it stands right now, the Columbus Blue Jackets are the first wild card seed, meaning that they'd play the Pittsburgh Penguins, okay? They're tied with the Detroit Red Wings, who are now the second wild card seed. They both have the same amount of points, but Columbus has the tiebreaker. So if both Columbus and Detroit win their last game, Columbus is going to be playing Pittsburgh. And we're going to go on the basis that the standings are going to stay the same, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to play the Columbus Blue Jackets. So, gentlemen, with that said, this series, some people may say, oh, it's not, it doesn't really have much of a storyline. I think any series with Sidney Crosby has a storyline. I kind of like the Columbus Blue Jackets this year. I think they've been a little bit overlooked. What do you guys see in this series as the difference? The difference, who will be the difference maker? I mean, aside from Crosby, who on Columbus is he? Let's start there. Who do you think will be the difference maker for Columbus if they're to succeed in this series?
I mentioned this 3 weeks ago on the Illegal Curve midweek show. Nathan Horton is a guy that has struggled big time offensively. He was brought in, and they knew that he wasn't going to play until the midseason mark. It was really early February that Nathan Horton came back, but he's struggled offensively, and he's a guy that last year he's hurt again.
6 weeks he's out.
He's not playing in the first round. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's done.
So Nathan Horton isn't going to play, which is terribly terrible for their chances. And when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, the lack of storyline, I think, is ridiculous because the Columbus Blue Jackets are in the playoffs for only their second time in their existence, and they persevered and beat out favorites to make the playoffs. You're talking the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Ottawa Senators, the Washington Capitals. So for them just to be in the playoffs is a major accomplishment for this group, Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson and Todd Richards, the coach. So I think the storyline is it's huge underdog versus a favorite for the Stanley Cup. And sure, the Pittsburgh Penguins have their issues on defense, Richie, and Chris Letang is just coming back from his stroke, and Paul Martin is coming back after being injured in the Olympics. And we talked to Kevin Allen about this, and a guy that I really like, and I know you like too, Richie, Matt Niskanen, Olli Maatta have done a nice job filling in for those guys. But ideally, you want Letang, Orpik, Martin, those guys to log more minutes. But to me, this is a bad mismatch for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I do have the Pittsburgh Penguins winning in less games than I think Columbus Blue Jackets fans would like. The Blue Jackets are a rugged team, Richie. And we've talked a lot about the guys that have had career years, Ryan Johansson, Cam Atkinson has been really good. Boone Jenner has had a really good rookie year. They just don't have enough offense, especially without Nathan Horton. I knew that he was injured, but now that you told me that now he's out for 6 weeks, that's a big injury for them.
It is a huge injury.
And I like the Pittsburgh Penguins in five in the series. I have, and this goes for the next few rounds. I'm telling you right now, I have absolutely no problems with Marc-Andre Fleury in the playoffs. I know that the last 4 years, his save percentage and goals against have been just awful and not based on what his regular season play would indicate. But to me, it's going to come down to really the Pittsburgh Penguins and their offense, because last year it was Crosby and Malkin that were shut down, and that's why they didn't go ahead. So to me, Fleury's got to be better. But in this series, Columbus is just overmatched by a team that's good on special teams. They're healthy now. They're getting healthier, I should say. They've just got more depth, and I just don't think this is the year that the Blue Jackets get to the second round.
And you mentioned special teams, Ezzy. The Pittsburgh Penguins, number one overall in the National Hockey League in power play, number two overall in the National Hockey League in penalty kill. And, you know, that to your point, they're not a great 5-on-5 team, though. Actually, Columbus has been better 5-on-5 goals for versus goals against. than the Pittsburgh Penguins have been, but the Penguins score a lot. Fifth most goals in the National Hockey League. Columbus is 13th. So,
and you have to throw in, Richie, sorry to cut you off there, but you have to also have to throw in that they're going in with a Evgeny Malkin who hasn't played in a while. Mm-hmm. They're going in without Marcel Gotch. We don't know their exact status right now. There's still 5 days to go before the playoffs start, and you'd have to think that they're hoping that both of those guys will be in the lineup, but it's possible that they start without Malkin or without Gotch, and that's severely limits their ability to score, and in Gotch's case, defend. But I still like the Penguins, and I still like the Bruins for a lot of those reasons. The Jackets are a good team, and I think they're trending upward. But I think when you talk about the Bruins and the Pens, the class of the East, I just don't think they're going to be able to beat either of those teams in the 7-game series.
I think Columbus gives them problems, though. And if Nathan Horton's in this series, I think I actually might have picked the Columbus Blue Jackets to win the series.
That's why you asked who is the key player. And to me, there are key players. I mean, Richie, you could throw out Bobrovsky, who won the Vezina last year, and he could really cause them problems. But I just don't see him shutting down Crosby and Kunitz and Neal and all these guys. I don't see it. I think there's too much firepower there, even without Malkin.
I don't love the way the Pittsburgh Penguins defend and as a team. And I think Columbus has the size to be able to sustain offensive zone pressure along the boards, and I think Pittsburgh's lack of commitment to defense at times will come back to hurt them. You mentioned Malkin. If Malkin's not there, I mean, I think Columbus wins this series. If Malkin's there and Horton's not, it's tough to pick against the Penguins, Dave.
Yeah, the Penguins held the regular season advantage. They beat them 5 games. So, I mean, I think it's Pittsburgh's series to win. I think that's what it comes down to. I think I don't know that I subscribe to this notion.
David versus Goliath, really. If the Blue Jackets beat the Penguins, Dave,
yeah.
I mean, that's going to be ridiculous. That's way bigger than the Islanders beating them last year. Or they didn't, but they were close.
Yeah, you know what? I think what it comes down to, though, is like I don't know that I subscribe to this notion that teams are just happy to make it to the playoffs. Like, maybe the first time you're in your franchise history, you're excited to get there. And, you know, yeah, Columbus overcame some adversity, switched over to the East. People are excited that they made it. But the reality is, these guys want to win. They're not happy just to be there. Having said that, the experience will be very good. I'm with you, Richard. I think that Pittsburgh's defensively there could be a lot of lapses. There's offense, so I think we'll make up for it, especially, like you said, if Malkin is anywhere close to being 100%. I think Neal has to jump up for Pittsburgh and really kind of show them what he can do, why they brought him, you know, into the system and really kind of take it to the next level as well with the team. So I think the Penguins can take this. I think the Penguins will take this 1-6. I think Columbus will surprise some people when they pull off a couple of wins, but I think overall Pittsburgh just wins the series.
Well, Richie, and your point is well taken, going back to Pittsburgh and not only this series, but moving forward and more so moving forward. When you take out Malkin and Gotch, two centers, obviously, they've been forced to put Jussi Jokinen in the center role. He was playing left side with Malkin and at times Brandon Sutter. Brandon Sutter's not good enough offensively to play second line center for this team, so he's a natural third line center. So they've got depth on the bottom lines, and Stempniak has now been usurped by Bo Bennett on that top line with Crosby and Kunitz. He's done a nice job, but he hasn't played a lot this year.
Yeah.
So to me, I think they get past the Blue Jackets. Yeah. But as you mentioned, let's say they play the Flyers in the second round and they're not completely healthy. I have concerns there.
You mentioned health. Let's quickly point out the injuries that both of these teams have, because I think they're more than significant, as we've alluded to. Shelley Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reports this morning that Evgeny Malkin, Joe Vitale, and Chris Connor all skated hard, and it appears any of the three would be ready to go if they really needed them in the playoffs. So they might drop them into a game here over the weekend, but they also may not. But they're going to be ready, so that's obviously important. Most of all, Malkin, because as you mentioned, pushes Jokinen to the side and gives them the number one and two dominant combo of centers of Crosby and Malkin. Two injuries to Columbus that are very significant, aside from the Nathan Horton one, which is, I think, devastating, as you mentioned, Desi. And that's R.J. Umberger and Nick Foligno, two bigger guys who are tough to play against. Umberger, you know, really big guy. And Aaron Portsine of the Columbus Post-Dispatch writes this morning that Foligno is closer to returning than Umberger, but neither might be ready for the start of the playoffs. And think about that. Think about no Umberger, no Foligno, and no Horton on a team that kind of scores by committee, is big, and it gives you trouble. And while I like the development of Ryan Murray, and I think it's going to be a bit of a coming-out party for Ryan Murray in these playoffs because he's going to be playing against probably Malkin with Sidney Crosby's close friend Jack Johnson lined up against each other. Jack Johnson and Tootin, I think, will draw Crosby. I think Ryan Murray and Wisniewski will draw Malkin. I don't think Columbus can score enough in this series to keep up with Pittsburgh, and I think that's going to be the difference. So I have the Penguins in six games, but I don't love the Penguins this year at all. Dave?
That's what I said. I already said the Penguins in six. I think the Columbus takes...
I want to put on the record here, though. There we go. Penguins in six.
I said Penguins in six.
Penguins in five. Okay. And I agree with you. Pittsburgh was my... And we can't change our choices. We made a rule on the show five years ago that you can't, if you pick a team before the season, you got to stick with that team. I picked Pittsburgh at the beginning of the year. But if you'll allow me, I'm not confident in that pick because of the way the Boston Bruins have played throughout this year. To me, they're the favorite in the East. So it's Pittsburgh in five. But if they don't get Malkin back, and it looks like they will, but if they don't have a productive Malkin, a productive Marcel Gotch, if Letang isn't ready to step in there and play a bigger role, not just a third-pairing role, I think they're going to have trouble in the next round against Philly or the Rangers.
I should ask quickly, though, guys, before we go to break. If Pittsburgh plays Detroit, do you guys also have Pittsburgh winning that series?
I would still take Pittsburgh, but I would probably say it would be a seven-game series. I'd still take Pittsburgh, though.
I could see Detroit. That's, you know, those back-to-back Stanley Cup finals.
23 years, Dave. They've made the playoffs for 23 straight years.
I could
years.
See Detroit knocking off Pittsburgh.
I will say this. If Pittsburgh plays Columbus, as I said, I have Pittsburgh in six. If Pittsburgh plays Detroit, I have Detroit in seven. I'll put it that way.
23 is also Michael Jordan's number.
When we come back, the Boston Bruins are going to play one of Columbus or Detroit. We're going to base the analysis on Boston playing Detroit, and we'll pick our winners of that series coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're breaking down the playoff preview show on TSN 1290.
This segment is going to be dedicated to Steven Van Zandt of the E Street Band. A.K.A. Silvio Dante from The Sopranos.
That's my favorite show of all time, by the way. Sopranos. Yep.
I think Breaking Bad was good, and The Wire was good, you know, speaking of the Baltimore Orioles. But Sopranos was the best show of all time.
Who were speaking of the Orioles in the break? Otherwise, people would not know what you're talking about with the Orioles.
Yeah, most people don't know what I'm talking about. Did you say Orioles or Oreos?
The Boston Bruins were in town on Thursday night. I mean, they didn't dress a full squad. You didn't see Patrice Bergeron. You didn't see Zdeno Chara.
Well, we saw him in the press box. Yeah. He's one big boy.
He was one big boy.
Wow. He was leaning down a couple of times. He had to walk a little hunched.
You didn't see Tuukka Rask, either. So the Boston Bruins, I think, are the favorite in the Eastern Conference. And right now, they're the number one seed, and they're going to be the number one seed. We don't yet know who they're going to play, but if Columbus beats Florida, which we assume they will, it's going to be Boston against Detroit, an original six first-round series.
And when was the last time they played?
Oh, I mean, Detroit's been in the West since 93.
I'm thinking it might have been back to the 40s or 50s. Maybe Reem can check that out.
That's a good question, Eddie. We will look into that. But you think about Boston Bruins, and you play so hard all year to get the home ice advantage and be the first seed overall. They're, you know, they're the first seed overall in the National Hockey League. You look at them, they have 115 points. They cannot be caught by anybody else except for the Anaheim Ducks. So
they have to win out, and then the Bruins would have to not get any points.
So they're going
to
be the number one seed in the National Hockey League. But you think about all the effort they put in, and then the reward is to play the Detroit Red Wings, who are starting to get healthy. That's not exactly much of a reward. Before we get to Yezzy, I want to quickly go over the stats. The Bruins have scored the third most goals in the National Hockey League and allowed the second least. It's very hard to be that good at both. And if you look around all the other teams, aside from Pittsburgh and Anaheim and San Jose, really, those four teams, aside from that, it's hard to score goals. Like, LA Kings defend, they don't score. It's hard to do both. It's hard to defend so well and still create offense. And that's a testament to their depth. I think their coaching, their management. They're the best 5-on-5 team in the league. They're the third best power play team. They're the eighth best penalty kill team. They're the fifth best shots for team in the league. They are the top 10 of everything.
Yep.
Shots against, their 12th. And that's it. Probably because they lead a lot of games, and they're top 10 in faceoffs. So the Boston Bruins are a top 10 team through and through. The Red Wings are about middle of the pack in all those categories, and they have issues defending, as Kevin Allen mentioned. But are you, if you're a Bruins fan, are you pretty concerned that you're playing against the big bad, you know, you're the big bad Bruins, but you're playing against a slick team in the Detroit Red Wings with Mike Babcock behind the bench?
I'm not a Bruins fan, but I'm not concerned at all.
Okay.
You mentioned these categories, the offensive categories, the defensive categories, Richie, the special teams categories. This team doesn't have a weakness, and we've said this time and time again, and you know that I have no vested interest. I'm not paid by Peter Chiarelli to say this. The Boston Bruins are the most complete team. They have the most depth. Carl Soderberg is a guy we talked to Jack Edwards about. Jack Edwards is, of course, the voice of the Bruins on Nesson. This team doesn't have any weaknesses, and the lines that they roll out are really, they're so evenly rolled out. And you throw out, you mentioned Patrice Bergeron didn't play, but they're just resting him. But that top line of Milan Lucic, and Kevin Allen touched on this a little bit, David Krejci and Jerome Iginla. Jerome Iginla is second on the team in scoring, 12th consecutive 30-goal year. He's added that not only that goal-scoring element, but speed and a physical element to that line. Of course, that was Nathan Horton was on that line last year. And then the second line of Brad Marchand, Bergeron, and Riley Smith. And then you go down to the third line with Carl Soderberg and Louis Erickson, whether it's Danny Paille or Jordan Caron there. So you look at this team, and I'm just talking about the forwards here. I don't have concerns, and I know that, you know, Dennis Seidenberg's been out. He's been out for a while, guys, and guys like Matt Bartkowski have stepped in, and a guy like Johnny Boychuk has elevated himself to that top pair role with Zdeno Chara, who plays 25 minutes a game. This team has so much depth that I think even though the Detroit Red Wings are a great story and they were kind of on the outside looking in, Richie, for a lot of the playoffs, I just don't think they're going to be able to handle. This group of defensemen is not going to be able to handle how good this team is. You talk about 5-on-5. Is there a better 5-on-5 team? And I'm not just talking maybe statistically, but really the Bruins are just incredible the way they play in five-man units.
When you look at the matchups, and I think it's interesting because Detroit has lots of depth now. You get Datsyuk back, and you know we're waiting to hear kind of about when Zetterberg, if Zetterberg comes back, and what the situation is there. But you look at the Boston Bruins, as you mentioned, Krejci, Lucic, and Iginla. And then I think
the best line in hockey.
I think that who they're going to task with shutting that trio down is Nicholas Cronwall and Brendan Smith, likely. And I like Nicholas Cronwall. Brendan Smith's a young defenseman, but can they do that? And boy, it's going to wear them down throughout a seven-game series. And if they are able to do that, well, then who shuts down? You mentioned Soderberg. What about Bergeron? Like Danny DeKeyser, Kyle Quincy, Jakob Kindle. Kindle I like. Some of those guys I like. But that is a big job for young defensemen who don't have the, you know, aren't the best defensively. And then Jimmy Howard, Tuukka Rask, which we haven't talked about. I think Rask is clearly the better goaltender. So I think the Red Wings give him trouble, Dave, but I think it's I don't know how much trouble they give him.
You know what? It's interesting because the Red Wings have the a number of guys from their core in the that were with the Grand Rapids Griffins who won the Calder last year, I believe. So, you know, it's if you look at guys like, you know, you've got Tatar and Sheehan and Nyquist. So they're it's not the Detroit Red Wings we're used to. The Detroit Red Wings we're used to is that really, really stacked veteran team. And, of course, they have those vets like Datsyuk and Franzen. And Alfredson, obviously, so it'll be interesting to see what impact he can bring to the game. And normally I would say that Detroit would match up well against the team, but the problem is when that team's the Boston Bruins, that's a problem. Because I think Detroit is good. I think Detroit, now their goal differential this year hasn't been great. I think they're like minus 11. I think they've only scored 219 goals this season. So, I mean, they
have.
That
has a lot to do with all the injuries they've had.
Absolutely.
The injuries they've had, Dave, this year are ridiculous.
Oh, no. There's no question about it. And again, when you watch, I mean, I had the fortune of being in Michigan for a number of years, so I was able to watch a lot of Red Wings games, and Pavel Datsyuk is just a magician. You know, that's why they call him the wizard with the puck. The things he can do when he's healthy is unbelievable. Like, he's just, he really is that good. And the problem is, when you have a player like Zetterberg out of the lineup, he is so key to this team, to what he can do. Both
your
ways,
captain.
Yeah, exactly. And he's efficient, and he really is integral to what this team can do moving forward. So I think without Zetterberg, that's problematic. Again, when you're facing up against Boston, a team with very little, you know, if any holes in it, how do you not have your best players in the lineup and beat them? It's gonna be very difficult. I don't think Detroit can do it personally.
On Zetterberg, Kenny Holland said this week, until he is practicing with the Red Wings, we really don't know his status. Now, he is skating now, but he's skating on his own. He had back surgery, of course, guys, so not light surgery. Just a couple injury notes to point out. Henrik Zetterberg is an injury, obviously, for the Red Wings, as we've mentioned. Stephen Weiss is injured.
He's been out for most of the year.
Yeah, and so he hasn't played. Danny Cleary has an injury. And then you have Jonathan Erickson. I think that's a big injury, especially the size that he has with his broken finger. The size that he has and can utilize against a big Boston Bruins team on the forecheck and then sustaining pressure in the offensive zone. Those are injuries. In terms of Boston, obviously the big injury is Dennis Seidenberg, and I think that affects their depth. Well, I know it affects their depth, and Detroit's pretty deep offensively, so you wonder how much they'll be able to exploit the Bruins' back end and the young guys you guys mentioned. Bergeron and Kelly are apparently ready to go, and Adam McQuaid, you know, you might see him early in this series as well. We can get an update on him.
But he's a bottom pairing guy that would most likely take Andre Mazaros out of the lineup, a guy who was acquired from Philly. But I think Dave raises a lot of good points. Detroit has a lot of depth and a lot of veteran depth. And you mentioned, Dave, you mentioned that the Grand Rapids Griffins effect, and a guy like Gustav Nyquist, he's either first, second, or third, one of those in the second half of the season in goals scored. So this guy has been incredible, a great find for them. And guys like Riley Sheahan and Tatar, also guys that have filled nice roles. And the Red Wings guys have really, really impressed me down the stretch here. And there's a lot to be hopeful for. A guy like Darren Helm has been good. But when you match up against the Boston Bruins, and they have the puck most of the game, let's be honest, this is a team that loves to control the puck down low. They're really big and tough to handle. I think even though you got guys like Daniel Alfredson and Datsyuk, guys that have smart players that have been there, I just think they're too much to handle. And Richie mentions Jonathan Erickson, a guy that recently got a contract extension. You don't have Nicholas Lidstrom anymore. Mm-hmm. Nicholas Lidstrom's back there, and you have a guy like that. I'm a little bit more confident. And no offense to Nicholas Cronwall, great defenseman too. It's a mismatch for me.
You know, it'll be if Boston loses the series, it will be a nightmare on Helm Street.
I got
what do you have?
Bruins in six.
I got the Bruins in six, yeah.
All right, we'll make it three there because I have the Bruins in six as well.
Richie, six is good.
Erickson is not expected back for the first round of the playoffs, people to point out. McQuaid skating, but we don't really know his status at all. When we come back, we're moving over to the Western Conference, and there's no better person to talk to about the Western Conference hockey than Eric Dehatchuk of the Globe and Mail. He's next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. If you're just tuning in, you missed our grades of the Winnipeg Jets so far this season. Well, so far, the season's over, so we gave our final grades: forwards, defensemen, management, coaching, and goaltending.
Richie, I'd like to give you a grade right now for hosting. I'm going to give you an A++. You're doing a great job filling in for... Who's the host of our show before? Drew Mandel?
I forget his name.
Is it Mindel? Drew Mindel.
The second hour of the show, we broke down the Eastern Conference playoffs. And we spoke to Kevin Allen, of course, in the first hour about who he thought was coming out of the East and why. So, of course, with the Eastern Conference now... We think, analyze as far as we could go. We move over to the Western Conference, and there's no better person to speak to than Eric Dehatchuk of the Globe.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Eric, always a pleasure to have you on to preview the season and, of course, the playoffs. How are you?
I'm very good. Very good. Looking forward to it, actually. I think this is going to be a really, really interesting playoff this season for lots of different reasons.
Oh, it absolutely will. And let's start off with the Kings and Sharks in a first-round matchup, which could be the conference final matchup if you didn't have the division set up the way they are. You've seen both of these teams quite a bit. I guess first question on this series is, you know, San Jose's a team that can skate pretty well, and we know the Kings beat them last year in a series that was dominated by the home teams, but San Jose can skate pretty well. The Kings aren't the fastest team in the league. Do you think that's going to be an edge that San Jose is going to try and exploit?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I was actually in San Jose last Thursday when the teams played, and had a chance to talk to all of the principals after the game. And actually, the one thing that was clear in that game was that the biggest fundamental difference, I thought, was the goaltending. You know, because Jonathan Quick in that matchup is bulletproof. I mean, he's really been terrific since he's come back from that injury. And the Sharks just aren't sure about Antti Niemi at this stage of the game. I mean, he's been a guy that was terrific for them last year and has been really up and down. So I think that you know, if the goaltending is equal, if Niemi can come in and be the equal or close to the equal of Quick, then I think the series tilts in favor of San Jose. And I think one of the reasons is the speed. You know, I was talking to Todd McClellan about that, and he, you know, I said, is the game faster? Like I said, in the last year and a half, is the game even faster? And he said, absolutely it is. In fact, he had a funny observation. His point was, he said, you know, one of these days, you know, in the NHL, they'll be able to sell tickets above the ice, he says, and so the fans can see the game from, like, virtually, like, hovering over them like a, you know, Jetsons kind of a cartoon. And he said, then people will really understand how fast the game is. And he said, and speed is one of those topics that people sometimes misunderstand, because it isn't, you know, like one guy starting at the goal line and then racing another guy to the other goal line. It's how you play and how quickly you move the puck. And that's the one thing that I've noticed with San Jose this year. They seem faster to me than in the past. And they've still got, you know, guys who aren't really that fast. Like Thornton is not that fast. But they play a fast game. And I think that is a thing that they could potentially exploit against the Kings.
Eric, sticking with the San Jose Sharks, and on this show, I know Richie and I have debated this a lot. The San Jose Sharks group of defensemen, sixth in the league goals against. But as far as defensemen go, you know, with this group, you know, we've got Dan Boyle and Brad Stewart and a guy like Jason Demers, obviously Mark Edward Vlasic played for the Canadian Olympic team and did a great job. Do you think that this is still their Achilles heel?
Well, I thought that that Dan Boyle wasn't up to his usual standard in the first half of the season. I mean, lots of people still had him in the Team Canada conversation. I didn't. I thought he'd fallen out of the top 10 in terms of candidates for that position. I think that, you know, that Mark Giordano had moved ahead of him among guys that didn't make it and so on and so forth. But I really think that the Olympic break helped him, because I think that, you know, he had that injury earlier in the year, and then he had the rest that you know, that I think he needed. So I think since they've resumed play, I think the break has really turned him into a better player. And he's still not really, you know, burning up the minutes that he once did. I mean, he was like a high minute guy in that thing. It was always like Dan Boyle and the rest. Well, really, Vlasic has become that guy in terms of, you know, being on the shutdown pair. So I think that they're using Boyle very effectively right now. And so I think that they're an underrated group. I mean, Stewart hasn't always been healthy this year either, and he's kind of playing on the third pair. If you can have, you know, an experienced guy like Brad Stewart on your third pair, that's pretty good. Vlasic has had a tremendous year, you know, for all the reasons that the Canadian Olympic team liked him. I mean, those are the reasons that the San Jose Sharks like him too. And you know, guys like Braun and Demers are a little bit better than than you think. So no, I think that both teams have very effective Ds. I mean, you know, let's flip the question and look at LA's. I mean, you know, everybody gets excited by Drew Doughty. You know, people, you know Voinoff now because he has at different times put up points. But, you know, they're getting a fair bit out of Alec Martinez. They're getting a fair bit out of Jake Muzzin. And Daryl Sutter loves Willie Mitchell and Robin McGeer for what they bring in terms of their experience and muscle. I mean, you know, the one thing about LA's defense is it's mean and physical. Those two guys I just mentioned really make you pay the price. Doughty is the most skilled guy in the league that also makes you pay a price. I guess you could put Shea Weber in that category too. So they are both, I think, are collectively really good groups, maybe better than the sum of their individual parts. I would give a slight edge to Los Angeles, but I wouldn't make it a heavy edge in their favor. I think that San Jose is underrated, and I think that they've been pretty good this year.
Eric, it is looking more and more like we are going to see the Blues and the Blackhawks in the first round of the playoffs. Can the Blues keep up with the Hawks' speed and scoring ability?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I guess it depends on how healthy they are. As St. Louis, it was funny. I had this conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago. I wish I had written something about it, but we were talking a little bit about, you know, who we like this year, and I said, I kind of like San Jose and Colorado, and you know, the guy I was talking to said, really, you're not, you know, buying into the Blues? I said, there's something about the Blues that makes me nervous. I said, and it's not, you know, the fact that they, you know, that they've got Ryan Miller, and this was before the injuries to Backes, Oshie, and the rest of those guys. You know, the thing about St. Louis perennially is that Ken Hitchcock is such a good coach that he gets the most out of the talent at hand. Because I look at their lineup and I say to myself, how are they so good? Like, they were in contention at that point for the President's Trophy. And, you know, their number one line is a very good number one line, but it falls off after that. And so what they do is they get everything that they can out of the group. But I think that when you you do that, you don't have another level to get to. So then I look at the other teams, and I look at Chicago, and I think Chicago has another level. You know, I think Colorado has another level. I think San Jose, I think L.A. for sure has another level based on the way that they played in the regular season and the problems that they've had at different times. And I'm not sure that St. Louis necessarily does. So I thought that if everybody else gets a little bit better and St. Louis stays the same, that makes them vulnerable. Well, you know, that's easier to say now compared to 2 weeks ago when they were flying high. Now they've really had trouble winning. They've really had trouble scoring. And the big issue is going to be, you know, how healthy are those guys going to be? I think the later they start, the better for that group. If Backes comes back and plays, if Oshie comes back and plays, if Tarasenko those are three really important pieces. And teams will always tell you at this stage of the game that, you know, they won't even talk about injuries because, you know, whoever they've got, that's their team and that's who they play. But sometimes there's a difference between making an excuse and looking at the reality of the situation. And if those key guys are not available, or if they're not at 100%, and if they're just not themselves, if Backes isn't playing the way he can, if Oshie isn't playing the way he can, I don't know that St. Louis has the scoring depth to be able to make up the slack. Whereas a team like Chicago, you know, again, question marks there about how effective Kane and Taves can be coming out of the gate. So, you know, if you look at Chicago, and they're one of those teams where you can say to yourself, vulnerable in the first round, but could win it all. And I thought that the big issue with Chicago this year was simply going to be the cumulative effect of 2 years of hockey. How would that catch up with that team? And by that, I mean, remember how last year ended so late? I think it was, June 18th, yeah. 19th? It just because of the lockout. And then, you know, they're playing ball hockey in August. That's, you know, that's not a great strain. But it was a really, really short summer. And then for them to come out as effectively as they did at the start of the season, and they were just really good. You know, no talk. Every year it seems that somebody has to answer questions about Stanley Cup hangover. They didn't have to in Chicago. Credit to Joel Quenneville and to the professionalism of that group. But my question was always, you know, that's great for October, that's great for December. What happens if, you know, you're playing in May and June, and now you've played, you know, like 18 months of tremendously high-level hockey and Olympics thrown in there? You know, the key players, 10 of them were over there. You know, they didn't get a lot of rest coming out of that. What would be the effect? And I thought that it might catch up with them eventually. Well, I've had to reconsider that because, you know, Kane has been out with that injury now. Taves has been out with some injury. So they've got this forced rest, which is not ideal because you're probably not on top of your game going in. But if you can somehow manage to get through that first round, and I do believe Chicago can beat St. Louis, then those guys should be, you know, finding their second wind right in the second round. And you know, when they have all hands on deck, they're along with Boston the best team in the league. So it's, you know, I mean, I guess I'm hedging a little bit, but I really do think that those are the scenarios there. I mean, you know, the opposite of that is that, you know, the Kane and Taves aren't very good, and they struggle a little bit in the going, and that makes them vulnerable. So I don't know. I mean, it's, I guess if I had to make a pick right now, I would say that they can, you know, they can win with those guys at 80%, and then they can really go a long way as those guys get fully healthy and kind of get the rhythm of the games back.
We're joined by Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail previewing the Western Conference playoffs. And one last question about that, you know, that perspective series, Eric. Matchups, and we always talk about when we do our playoff preview show with you, you look at that Keith and Seabrook. If the St. Louis Blues are healthy with that top line, Oshie and Backes come back and play with Steen, if Keith and Seabrook are lined up against them all series, you know, I guess it gets down to that secondary scoring that you mentioned. And does St. Louis have enough of those guys to be able to produce enough offense?
Yeah, and like I say, I don't know if they do. You know, I think that, you know, Derek Roy has, you know, been mm-hmm. in and out of the lineup, and, you know, he plays 12 minutes some nights and a little bit more other nights. And I just don't know that they necessarily have that. But, you know, on the other hand, they are trying to win 2-1 games if they can, and their belief is that, you know, maybe they'll get some scoring from the defense, although, you know, even that has not been as dramatic as it was early. Like a guy like Jay Bouwmeester was contributing a fair mm-hmm. bit offensively, mm-hmm. and then his numbers kind of tailed off. But if you're trying to win 2-1, I mean, you can probably get the odd goal from the fourth line, the odd goal from the third line. It's a hard way to win, and, you know, think about how St. Louis played in that first round last year against Los Angeles. I mean, it was just a Pong war, and I think that's how they have to play. And so it's a hard way to play when you're healthy, but it's really a difficult way to play if you're not. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's possible that they have that, And, you know, it may well be that psychologically from St. Louis's perspective, to have expectations dampened the way they have in the last little bit, it may be a good thing, because mm-hmm. I think that was one of the things they didn't always, I don't think they felt comfortable being that favorite. I mean, you know, Sports Illustrated goes in and does a big feature on them after the trade deadline and talks about the Ryan Miller effect. And suddenly there's this blue-collar team in the national spotlight in the U.S., and you know, and immediately they started playing poorly. So, you know, somehow I think that there's a lighter weight on you when people are saying, same old St. Louis Blues can't do it. You know, that creates resolve in the dressing room, but I also think it just allows them to go out and play and not feel the weight of these expectations. And maybe it's something as simple as that. If they do get those people healthy and they just get out and play, and if they can somehow manage to find a way of beating Chicago, that, you know, when you knock off the Stanley Cup champions, that creates a tremendous amount of confidence. That's the one thing that St. Louis has to prove to themselves and mm-hmm. to people, that they can take these great regular seasons and carry them forward into the playoffs. And, you know, the fact that they don't have to play LA until the third round at the earliest, I think that's the best news that they've got right now.
Eric, as it stands right now, the Dallas Stars will play the Anaheim Ducks. As far as the Ducks go, we obviously know the Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaff line. Those two guys on the top line, that combo is arguably the best combo in the NHL. Do the Dallas Stars have a defensive answer for that line in the series?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure that they do. You know, I also think that what Anaheim has done well this year is that they've managed to create scoring from all the way through their lineup. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they win and when they're humming and when they're rolling, you know, they're getting what they get from Corey and from Ryan, but they, you know, they've gotten secondary scoring from Matthew Perreault, you know, the some of those Hard Rock guys that they've got on the wing at different times. Maroon's been good. Palmieri's been okay. Bilesky's been good at different times. So they're just better than you think. I mean, they are a team that if the top line dries out, they can, and they have gotten scoring from all the way through that lineup. Even a guy like Solani, they've really judiciously measured out his minutes. And, you know, I talked to him when I was down there a couple weeks ago, and he seems really anxious. I mean, this is why Team Solani came back, because he really felt that they had a chance to win it all. And he's chafed a little bit at the fact that he's playing not the same minutes that he did, say, for Finland in the Olympics, and had to sit out on those back-to-back nights. But Bruce Boudreau was resolute. You know, we were talking about that. It was the day that Winnipeg was through there, actually, and so that was a good time to talk to Temu and to talk about mm-hmm. how they used him. And Bruce was making no apologies. He was making no apologies about how he handled him. And he made the point that he thought that Solani had a lot more in the tank than he thought he would at this time of year. So I think, you know, like, to me, what's interesting about that series is Anaheim's goaltending is quite unsettled right now. For an elite team, you know, they've similar to the way that San Jose has got questions now about Niemi, they have questions about Jonas Hiller, too, and they've gotten great goaltending from Frederik Andersen this year, but I don't think they're 100% certain if he's going to be ready for the playoffs or not. And so they've been playing Johnny Gibson, and he's been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an interesting conundrum to be in. You know, when you think about, you know, actually, it's not just Anaheim. There's about five or six teams in the league. You know, the guys that they started the season with, the guys that played the heavy minutes, you know, suddenly it comes to playoff time, and you might have to be looking at putting somebody else between the pipes. So that's the real question in Anaheim. Who plays goal, and then how well do they play? Because Dallas is one of those teams that I think they've had a tremendous season. But often when a team has a breakthrough like Dallas has had, where they've missed, suddenly they make the playoffs, there's this involuntary temptation to just exhale a little bit. And suddenly you're down 2-0 and you're out in the first round. But you know what? We still had a very good season. So I just think Anaheim is better. And I think because of Anaheim's blip in the first round last year, they're going to be really motivated to make sure that it doesn't happen this year, because there's, you know, nothing, you know, takes the edge off of very successful regular season and to have a bad misstep in the playoffs. So, you know, I mean, Dallas, you know, I like their team and I like the direction that they're going, but I think that if you look at it, I mean, Anaheim is much further along that path, and so it would be a monumental upset, and it would really have to be, you know, letting and outplaying whoever mm-hmm. happens to start in Anaheim's goal, I think, for Dallas to be able to win that series. They could, because goalies have been known to do that, but, you know, when you balance all of the factors, you'd have to think that Anaheim is going to find a way.
We're joined by Eric DeHatrick of the Globe and Mail, previewing the Western Conference playoffs, and Eric, if Colorado wins or St. Louis loses, Colorado's going to clinch that number one seed in the Central Division. They're going to play against the Minnesota Wild in the first round of the playoffs. And you look at that series, and I think Colorado is the better team. Minnesota hasn't necessarily impressed me, but then you look at the matchups that it comes down to again. If DeShane is out, and in watching the Colorado game last night, they were alluding to the fact that they're not sure if he's going to come back in the first round. Ryan Suter pit Ryan Suter up against, say, McKinnon, Landeskog, and Stasny. Does Colorado's maybe lack of scoring after that, and maybe Minnesota's lack of defensive depth after Suter maybe offset each other?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Colorado's the team that I like, and even with DeShane out, I kind of, like I said, my gut has been telling me for several weeks that they're the team that's coming out of the Central, which, you know, I guess makes no sense rationally, but it just feels like they've got something going there this year, and I can't exactly put my finger on what it is, because if you look at their defense core, you'd think to yourself, wow, they're getting an awful lot out of a pretty no-name group after Eric Johnson. And, you know, but I think Varlamov has been, I mean, I gave Varlamov the Vezina today when I was picking my NHL award winners, and I know that the sentiment has been to pick Tuukka Rask, and Rask will probably win, and that, you know, that's not the wrong choice. But I just think that in terms of impact on a team, like if you ever judge the Vezina trophy the way you do the Hart, you know, most important to his team, I think Varlamov is that guy. Varlamov is to this year what Bobrovsky was to Columbus last year. You know, he's taken a team, and, you know, they often give up 40 shots a game. I mean, they're a fun team to watch. I love watching Colorado, and they freewheel a little bit, and they make mistakes. And Varlamov, you know, like Patrick Roy used to do at different stages of his career, or Grant Fear used to do, bails them out. And so if you have a goalie that can bail you out of situations where you've just made a terrible, terrible defensive gaffe, and then boom, you're off to the races the other way, and then you score on the counterattack. I mean, that's not what we think of as playoff hockey, right? So are they going to be able to play that way? Are they going to be able to win that way? I don't know. You know, I don't know. But they've played an unconventional style, kind of going against the grain of what we see in the NHL all year. I don't think they're going to deviate from that. I mean, I'm fascinated. I was kind of hoping it would be Colorado-Chicago, because I thought that would be like the best matchup of the first round in terms of, you know, what the teams can bring offensively and how they would play, and, you know, the experience of Chicago against the youth of Colorado. So I'm a little sorry that it hasn't worked out that way, or it doesn't look as if it's going to work out that way. But I don't know. There's a part of me that thinks like that Colorado, for a lot of reasons, some of them rational, some of them irrational, have enough to not just win one round, but to win a couple.
Well, Eric, now it's our time to put you on the spot. Who are your cup finalists, and who is your cup winner?
Well, you know, I honestly have, until you asked me that, I have not picked anyone yet, so I'm going to have to go through. I think Boston is the class of the East, so something would have to go dramatically wrong there in terms of injuries and other things for them not to win. I mean, it could happen, but I just think they're better than everybody else, whereas I think the West is very balanced. So I'm going to take San Jose in the Pacific. I'm going to take Colorado in the Central. I think San Jose can beat them. So I'm going to say it's a Boston-San Jose final. I think that would be great. You know, Joe Thornton gets a chance to go home, prove people wrong. But I think Boston is the Stanley Cup champion.
Eric DeHatcher, that's the exact same final prediction I made at the beginning of the year, so I hope you're right. And I can finally look right for once. And I talked about the Thornton storyline, because that would be a great storyline for a Stanley Cup final between those two teams on the East and West Coast. Eric DeHatcher of the Globe and Mail, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Nobody knows the NHL better than he does, and we're always appreciative of your time.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
When we come back, we're going to break down these series that we just did with Eric, although not as well, I can assure you that. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
If you're just joining us, you missed a terrific performance by Eric DeHatcher of the Globe and Mail, breaking down the Western Conference playoffs. Nobody does it better than Eric, and we're always happy to have him join us for the regular season and playoff preview shows here on the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk. Michael Remus and Timmy Debenham doing just terrific jobs, as they always do. This segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Legal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Corden and Lanark in the Corden Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Yeah, check them out. Great restaurant. We've been going there since we were little ones. And they've got a lot of good menu items. I'm going to go there right after the show and probably have six or seven of them.
L.A., San Jose. We talked about it with Eric. Let's go. We're a little bit up against the guys, so we've got to be a little bit quicker here. Quickly, San Jose is going to play L.A. We know that. San Jose is a 2-seed. They have home ice. L.A. is a 3-seed. It's going to be an interesting matchup. Goals for San Jose is top 10. Goals against San Jose is top 10. 5-on-5, San Jose is top 10. Penalty kill, San Jose is top 10. And shots for and against their top 10. Third best team in faceoffs. Most disciplined team in terms of minor penalties taken. And third most in block shots. They're basically top in everything. L.A. can't score. Quickly, I'll just do this shortly. Mm-hmm. They can't score, but they can defend as good, if not better, than anybody else. Who do you guys have in this series and why?
This is a tough one. This is the series I'm looking forward to the most in the Western Conference here. You mentioned that the LA Kings have had trouble scoring goals. Anze Kopitar, Dustin Brown, Justin Williams, guys that they have counted on year after year, have had off years. Mike Richards, another guy that has struggled offensively. And that's one of the reasons why they brought in Marian Gaborik. To me, this is all their ability to shut down guys that are having fantastic career years. And I know Logan Couture has had injury problems. He's back in the lineup now. He was playing last night. For me, it is defense, and the LA Kings have come through here in Winnipeg and really frustrated the Jets, and they frustrate many teams. They're the best defensive team in the league. Eric Duhatchik said it. It's statistical, but it's also this group that Daryl Sutter has put together in the sense of the line combinations with Jake Muzzin's a guy I really like, and Doughty, and they're so good. Willie Mitchell, the list, you guys know the list, goes on and on and on. Alec Martinez. This is such a good group, and Jonathan Quick is a top three goaltender in the NHL. So, to me, I want to say that the San Jose Sharks, because they've been so good and they've been fighting for that Pacific Division, I want to say it, but the LA Kings, when it comes around to the playoffs, and Mike Richards and Jeff Carter and Dustin Brown, Dave, year after year, not just the cup year, but last year, they seem to just turn it up to another level. So I'm taking the Kings in seven.
I think it's going to be a great series. I think it's going to be another battle. A lot of late games, the Pacific time zone. Mm-hmm. But I think San Jose's just got a really nice depth to the team. And, you know, every year we make it as a joke and we say, we really hope, you know, is this year San Jose is going to get it done? I think the question mark is goaltending. Will Thomas Hurdle be, you know, sufficiently back from his
knee.
Hurdle in last night.
No, but he was back last night. But I'm saying, you know, he had major reconstructive surgery to his knee. So the question is, will he be able to play at a high level that they need in the playoffs? Right, it's different than the regular season. I think San Jose gets it done in seven this year.
You know, guys, I'm as he tells me, I can't. You know, I shouldn't go back on my preseason prediction.
And
so I do like LA, but I actually do like San Jose more because I think San Jose's depth up front. I think LA is depth up front, but they still can't score.
Richie, four of the five games between these teams this year were one goal games.
Yeah, I think the whole series is gonna be one goal games. If you remember last year, they played in the second round, and all it was home team won. And it's an interesting and tough matchup. Remember, San Jose didn't play great last year. They play a lot better this year. Remember, last year San Jose was, you know, on the brink there. So I like San Jose this year in seven because I think that their offensive depth and ability to score and create speed off the rush is going to be too much for an LA team that's a little bit slower. And I think some of the names on the back of the LA jerseys carry a little bit more weight than the play does. And I think that's changed over the past couple of years. When we come back, we're just zooming through the Western Conference here. When we're back, Anaheim, Dallas is going to be the topic of discussion. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Half an hour to go on the Legal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday, April 12th, 2014. We've been breaking down the Eastern Conference playoffs, the Western Conference playoffs, and earlier in the show, we graded out the Winnipeg Jets for the 2013-2014 season. This segment's brought to you by the official sponsor of the IC Game-Winning Goal and IC 50-50 Contest, CompuStitch Embroidery and Design. CompuStitch Embroidery Design has been serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996. For more information, CompuStitch.net.
For the record, the IC Game Winning Goal IC 50-50 contest officially ended last night. However, we have the IC OT pool.
Who took Paul Postma?
It's a good question. I haven't checked yet. But the ICOT pool will be in full effect for the playoffs. So we continue at Illegal Curve. You give us your guess for overtime. You get one option. You win a toque. It's a lot of fun.
You can find us on Twitter, as Dave mentions, at Illegal Curve. Dave, there's going to be some coverage of the Jets tomorrow on the website.
Yeah, the Jets are doing their end-of-season chit-chats with the media tomorrow, so we will have comprehensive audio clips on site, illegalcurve.com, for all your Winnipeg Jets needs.
Two series I want to tackle in this segment, guys, okay? And the first of those is Anaheim against Dallas, which we expect to happen. I think Anaheim, with two games left, should be able to win out and get the number one seed in the Western Conference. If Anaheim plays Dallas, I think they are clearly the favorite. They're the number one team in goals for, number nine in goals against, second best team in five-on-five goals for versus goals against. Not good on the power play or penalty kill. Below average and below, you know, the middle of the line on both, which is somewhat surprising, especially based on the offensive talent they have on the number one unit. But they generate shots, and they're pretty good at preventing shots as well. If you look at all the categories, they essentially dominate Dallas in all of them on the stat sheet. Do you guys have Anaheim as the clear favorite in this series?
I really do, Richie. And, you know, you mentioned the goals, and both teams aren't very good in the special teams. So, to me, this comes down to 5-on-5. And no, whether it's Palmieri or Matt Beleski on the line with Getzlaf and Perry, this is still a line that really can't be stopped by anyone. And when you look at it, whether it's Goligoski and Daly or if it's Brendan Dillon, the Dallas Stars, it's a good story. They made the playoffs for the first time in 6 years, and we really got to give Jim Nill a lot of credit there, and Lindy Ruff too, the whole organization. They've done a great job to get back into the playoffs and really right that ship. But when you look at Getzlaf and Perry, they're so dominant 5-on-5. They're just unstoppable, really. There's only a few defensemen that are physically and talented enough to stop these guys. Look at what happened in the Olympics. So, for me, the Anaheim Ducks are just going to be too much for the Dallas Stars to handle. And I think the Dallas, and we should mention, too, the series, Dallas Stars did beat the Ducks twice this year. Take that for what it's worth. The Stars aren't a very good road team, under 500, good home team. So to me, the Stars are going to win one game in the series. I'm going to take the Ducks in five.
I think the Ducks are, as you know, talking about continuity from last year, I think the Ducks are still feeling the effects of getting knocked out early. And I think that this team really, there's a reason Solani came back. He thought that this team had enough to really kind of make a charge into the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see. I think that Dallas doesn't have... I think, again, it kind of comes down to Dallas looking like they're just kind of happy to have gotten into the playoffs, and whether they exhale at that point and kind of lose their focus just because they've made it, they've gotten over that hump.
Eric said exactly.
That's exactly what Eric said. So I think that's kind of what will end up happening. I mean, the Dallas fans, by the way, hopefully they show up because they haven't all season. So that'll be... it could be an interesting atmosphere at the games. I think Anaheim takes it in five.
You know, guy, I'm with you, too. I think that if you look at Getzlaf and Perry, I think they're going to put Jordy Benn and Brendan Dillon up against that pairing, and I think physically they can probably handle it, more so Dillon than Benn. It's going to be a problem transition-wise. If you get in on them the forecheck, I don't think they're going to be able to get the puck out quick enough, and they're going to be wearing you down, Anaheim will. And I actually like Beleski on that line more than I like Palmieri, because I think Beleski gets really hard in on the forecheck.
And there was no problem getting rid of Dustin Penner, who was on that line earlier in the year.
I think Beleski is way better of a fit, and I think Beleski will lead the forecheck in many cases, and I think he'll be able to close the gap on a guy like Dillon. Ben's a really solid player, but I think he has to play a little bit over his head in that matchup. And even the rest of the Anaheim team, as Eric mentioned, they have a lot of depth scoring wise. They may not be the most talented, but Bonino, I really like the way he sees the game. Guys like Koivu, Winnick, and they know their roles. Perreault can see the game quite well, and I think Anaheim will be able to take it to them 5-on-5, and I think that's going to be the key. Dallas is going to have your Sagan line, and that's going to be important, obviously, because that's going to be something that they're going to try and roll them out as much as they possibly can. But having said that, you know, Cam Fowler is now back, and Anaheim's looking a little bit healthier than they were before. I think Dallas' only shot in the series is if Kari Lehtinen stands on his head for seven games. I don't see it happening. I also have Anaheim in five. Moving over, guys, to Colorado against Minnesota. Colorado wins their last game, or St. Louis loses. Colorado Avalanche are going to be number one in the Central Division, which would be quite an epic collapse, really, by the St. Louis Blues, and pit them against the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round. That's a series we're going to talk about in the last segment of the show coming up next. Colorado-Minnesota, though, guys. Duchesne's injury is huge, in my opinion. And how do you see this series going? Because there's a ton of speed here, but there's a contrast in styles. Colorado likes to push the pace and score, as Eric DeHatrick mentioned at the top of the hour. Minnesota, with their speed and skill, likes to play the old Jacques Lemaire style. How do you see this?
The Minnesota Wild are a great defensive team, and it seems like they have so many one-goal games. Every goal is a one-goal game, even though we saw that the Flames and the Devils mm-hmm. and the Jets were up there for one-goal games. But the Colorado Avalanche beat the Wild 4 out of 5 times this year. 3 of the 5 games were one-goal games. But to me, the Minnesota Wild aren't going to score enough goals. And I think the system there, Mike Yeo has done a good job to get this team into the playoffs again. But I think that when you look at the Colorado Avalanche, the speed that this team has, it's incredible. And I've watched the Avalanche a lot more than I have in previous years. Obviously, they were one of the worst teams for many years, and the games didn't mean a lot at this time of the year, the last few years. But the way they've turned around this season there with Patrick Roy as head coach, and Ryan O'Reilly is a Lady Bing favorite now. He's a guy that I really like because even though he doesn't take a lot of penalties, he's a guy that gets in on the forecheck and works in the corners mm-hmm. and can put the puck in the net. So to me, this series, I can't find a reason why the Minnesota Wild will come close to beating this team. And I like the Avalanche, despite Matt Duchene not being in the lineup. That hurts their depth at the center position. And I don't think Colorado is going to get past the second round. But I think that for this matchup, it's a good matchup for the Colorado Avalanche. I think they're going to be able to score a lot of goals. Varlamov got his first 40-win season this year. This team is heading into the playoffs. I think they have a lot to prove that they're not just a team that got in there.
That's a big edge goaltending.
They've done a great job here. And if Ilya Bryzgalov is your goalie going into the first round, even though he's been great since coming over, I just don't think that that's a good matchup. And so I'm going to take the Colorado Avalanche, and I'm going to take them in 5.
Wow. That's pretty bold, Ezzy. I mean, I know points-wise that's not the most bold pick, but I think if you look at it just in terms of the injuries and such, it's bold. Quickly, Dave, before we get your opinion, Colorado 4th overall in goals for Minnesota 24th. Minnesota's a better team in terms of goals against. They're top 5 in the National Hockey League, and Colorado is 13th. 5-on-5, Minnesota's actually better goals for goals against, 6th to Colorado's 9th, although it's very close. And you look at the rest of it, for the most part, these teams are actually pretty similar. Colorado's got a far better power play, and Minnesota's far better at preventing shots. They're both pretty disciplined, both middle of the road and faceoffs. Dave?
You know what? It's interesting. I think that you kind of see that contrast, offenses versus defense. Yeah. And really, the playoffs tighten things up. And I don't know that the Colorado Avalanche free-flow style will be able to be sustained in a playoff atmosphere. In a full series, yeah. I'm not sure it will. And, I mean, Colorado's been a great story, and everybody's talking about it, and you know what's funny? I actually could see Minnesota upsetting Colorado. I could see it.
Well, I could see it too.
So that's why, if you're asking me for my prediction, I would say Minnesota in 7.
Okay, I'm going to go, and I don't love the way Minnesota plays, and I don't think Mike Yeo employs
it's
the
not
right.
Exciting.
I don't think he employs the right system for the talent he has, and so I think Minnesota loses this series, but I think it's in 7, Dave. I think they push him to the brink. This is the key for me. Well, one of the keys. What Colorado does with their top line, if they spread it out because all their guys can play center and they try and make somebody aside from Ryan Suter defend. This is another thing. If Michael Granlund is not healthy, and right now he's, you know, Mike Yeo's not really sure, you know, he alluded to yesterday he's going to be skating, but he's not sure when he's back. Michael Granlund is a huge loss for that team. Eric yep. Halla in the middle is not anywhere close to Michael Granlund's talent. And if you're going to be playing a second line with Palmenville and Molson, you better have somebody who gets in the puck and is able to create offense, which Michael Granlund does. Without Granlund, I think that Minnesota's chances are hurt. I think if Granlund plays the whole series, I think actually Minnesota wins in 7. But with Varlamov and that injury, I have Colorado winning in 7. When we come back, boys, we're at the last segment of the show.
Where's the time gone?
Unbelievable. We're going to break down probably the most intriguing first-round series if it happens. It looks like it will happen. A collapse, the St. Louis Blues has led them down a road that has the Chicago Blackhawks firmly in front of them. And that is a scary prospect for every team in the National Hockey League, but especially one that made a big deal to get Ryan Miller and Steve Ott just before the trade deadline. One last segment coming up. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
If you haven't realized, the Legal Curve Hockey Show has now moved to 9 a.m. We're going to be at 9 a.m. through the remainder of the spring. And I think we're liking these mornings. This show's flown by. We're going to have to petition the station eventually to make our preview show 6 hours. I mean, people might not listen, but it would be fun because we have a lot to say and not enough time, Ezzy.
We haven't been on for 6 hours since, remember when the Jets came back?
Yes.
We were doing those long shows to take all those calls. But yeah, talking playoffs is the best. It really is because the first round of the playoffs, we all know anything can happen. All the overtimes, of course. Dave Minuk will have the IC overtime pool, which is always the best. And you got baseball starting up, basketball playoffs coming up. You got the Masters. There's so much going on.
Now, that voice you hear is Ezra Ginsberg of A Legal Curve. I'm Richard Pollack, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio, of course, also by David Minuk of illegalcurve.com.
Drew who?
Exactly. Timmy Debenham's been doing an amazing job today. Michael Remus doing a great job today. Have a whole crew on board for our playoff preview show, and it's been a blast. One final segment, as I mentioned, and we left the best for last, and that's the prospect of the St. Louis Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks facing each other in the first round. These are many
it's unbelievable.
Picks for the cup winner, but one of them's going to be out after the first round if they match up, and it appears if St. Louis loses or Colorado wins, then that's the first round matchup. I'm going to go over the numbers quickly, and I'm going to throw it to you guys because we can break down this series for the remainder of the show. It's hard, when I look at the numbers, basically it's easier to pick out the stats that these teams aren't top 10 in. They're both top 10 in goals for.
Yep.
Chicago is 11th in goals against, St. Louis is 3rd. Both top 10 5-on-5. Both top 10 power play. Chicago's penalty kill is 20th, St. Louis is 3rd, so that's one distinction there. Shots for, Chicago is 2nd, St. Louis is 22nd, so something else there. They're both top 10, top 5, in fact, in shots against. They both don't block a lot of shots because I probably have the puck on their stick a lot. And Chicago's a disciplined team. That's one thing to note. They're both top 10 in faceoffs, but Chicago's a disciplined team, guys. St. Louis under Ken Hitchcock, you'd say, oh, Ken Hitchcock is their coach. They must be disciplined. Not the case.
They've got guys like Ryan Reeves and Max Lapierre and even Polak and Jackman. So they've got some guys that'll mix it up. But you're right. A staple of a Ken Hitchcock team is usually discipline, right?
So, I mean, you want to put that Chicago power play to work. And Taves and Kane, we think, will both be back for the first round.
They were both on the ice today working out.
So then that's what we expect. And you look at St. Louis, you hear Backes will be back for the first game of the playoffs. And TJ Oshie, too. You know, they don't give you much information at this time of the year. But we expect them all to be back. If everybody's on board, and Tarasenko, we're not, so, you know, still injured. So that's a big loss, especially with, in my opinion, the St. Louis Blues' lack of scoring, which has been an issue all season. Ezzy, what do you see as the key to this series?
The key to this series is Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane's health. And if either one of those guys isn't at 100% or even not close to 100%, to me, that affects a lot. I mean, Taves and Kane are the best players for the Chicago Blackhawks. And we know that they've had issues at second line center for really the past couple of years. And Dave Bolin was traded. He was more the third line center. But to me, if those guys aren't healthy, I'm not as confident picking the Chicago Blackhawks. I still am going to pick the Chicago Blackhawks, even though, Dave, we know that they're practicing, but they're not at 100% yet. We haven't heard that they're at 100%. We expect them to be back. Now, Patrick Sharp and Marian Hossa, and you go down the list, they've got a lot of talent on this team. But to me, when you take out those guys down the middle, and you're putting Andrew Shaw, Michael Hanzus, which they are right now, into the first and second line center roles, that affects this team quite a bit. And we should mention that the Hawks have won 6 of their last 10. They're going into the playoffs playing pretty good hockey. But the St. Louis Blues are a great defensive team, and when you, Richie, take out Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves out of the lineup, it's easier for Ken Hitchcock to match up Jay Bouwmeester, Alex Pietrangelo on the first pair against the top line of the Chicago Blackhawks with Sharp and Hossa. I mean, sure, they're good players, but Taves makes that line a lot more dangerous. So to me, I'm taking the Blackhawks. I'm going to take the Blackhawks in 6 games.
6 games, really. That's interesting. Dave?
You know what? Once again, and I think this isn't shocking, but I think it comes down to goaltending. And I think you got Miller versus Crawford. I think it's going to be just fantastic. I think it really is going to make for an excellent series. Ez hit it on the head, though. What is the status of Kane and Taves, and are they going to be healthy?
What about Backes Oshie?
That's a good point, right? Because especially just before the playoffs, to see those guys go down with injury, you know, we know. The impression I'm getting is that Kane is going to be 100%, and Taves I think will be less so. So I think that we should be able to see a healthy Patrick Kane, which of course Chicago's going to need. I could see St. Louis needing this test to really kind of wrap themselves up for a long playoff run. So I see St. Louis beating Chicago in 7.
Wow.
But, I mean, that's kind of taking everything into account. Okay.
They're the second seed, so that's not right. A big wow, but just, you know, obviously you're going to see where I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, no, of course. And believe me, picking against Chicago, it seems insane. Uh-huh. But you have to pick a team, obviously. And so I really would think that St. Louis has played consistently. I love Hitchcock as a coach, although I like Quenneville too. So it's hard to go against either of those. That's why I have to go 7, because I really think it's going to be a chess match.
Joel Quenneville is like Ronnie Dangerfield. This guy just keeps winning, doesn't get any respect.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I just wanted to point out a couple things. The Blues did win the season series 3-2 between the Blues and the Hawks. The last two games, the Hawks did win both of the last two games by a combined score of 8-2, 4-0 and 4-2. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to mention, though, Richie, the thing that scares me a little bit, and I'm a little bit less confident in picking the Blackhawks, I'm not going to flip-flop, though, but this team, they did the Steve Ott and Ryan Miller acquisitions did make this team better. Not necessarily push them to win the division, even though Colorado's going to win the division, but make them a better playoff team. They upgraded. Alex Steen has had his best year. They've gotten better. But I still think that when you look at the matchups, and to me, I agree with you, Richie, what you said last segment about defense. It always comes down to defense, and we talked about Chicago versus St. Louis, and when you compare these two teams, there isn't much difference, but I still think Chicago has the edge. Keith and Seabrook are the best pair in the league, and then you go down the lineup, Oduya, Jarmelson, Letty, and so I still think they're a better defensive team, and they're going to outscore the Blues.
This is how I look at this series. You have Keith and Seabrook, arguably the best pairing. I think the best pairing in the National Hockey League. I have Duncan Keith, as my Norris Trophy winner this year, although my vote doesn't count. If St. Louis is healthy and they're able to match up Keith and Seabrook all series against Steen, Oshie, and Backes, then it gets down to who scores for St. Louis if they're able to be fairly successful. Even if Backes is offset by Taves, and I think Taves is the better player, if Taves, Sharp, and Hossa doesn't outscore Backes, Steen, and Oshie, which I think they will, even if they don't. Then you got Kane, you mentioned, you have Sharp. Who is scoring for the Blues after those guys? You'd say Jaden Schwartz, who I really like,
yep,
and Tarasenko. Problem with that is Tarasenko is hurt right now and has a hand injury. There's not many worse injuries you want than a hand injury coming back in the playoffs, because everybody knows you have a hand injury, and then handling the puck, and he's got a great wrist shot. Will he be able to get it off? And you better believe they're going to be hacking that hand at every chance they get. Then you got Derek Roy and Patrick Berglund, and Morrow just left the game the other day. Who's scoring? Like, Morrow can't skate well enough to get around. I think Berglund is very overrated. Derek Roy is not effective anymore at all. He's lost a step. Isn't big enough to get into the dirty areas, even if he's willing to go, and you could question that as well. I just don't think St. Louis can score with Chicago and keep up with that pace.
Right, and I agree with you, Richie. And I think when you look at the St. Louis Blues, and we know that they are one of the best defensive teams in the NHL, and they have the ability, especially if Taves and Kane, as we mentioned, are not 100%. But
I think Kane's just being held out to come back. Taves, I'm a little bit worried.
Yeah,
about.
And remember that was the hit. Of course, Brooks Orpik took him out, and there was that controversy whether it was a clean hit. I thought it was a clean hit. The Blues can defend, and you not just Petrangelo and Bomeister, but Jackman, Shattenkirk, and Downey.
I think Shattenkirk,
last pair.
I agree, Koliakko. I think Jackman and Shattenkirk are tad overrated because of the system they play in. And respect to them. Due respect to them. Shattenkirk has trouble on the forecheck. Now, Chicago's not going to kill you with size on the forecheck, but Jackman's lack of speed is going to be an issue as far as I'm concerned.
I think, though, when you get into the series, and the thing that concerns me about the Blues, a team that plays a lot better when they have the lead, when the Hawks start scoring and the Blues get down, and as you mentioned, when it's not Oshie or Steen or Backes putting the puck in the net, are these other guys going to be able to score? Jaden Schwartz has had a great year. Is he going to be able to score? Is Tarasenko going to score? Berglund, all these guys go down the lineup. Steve Ott, is he going to be able to score? His role is more of a checker. So I like the Hawks, and again, I take them in six.
You got Hawks in six. Dave, you have Blues.
Yeah, I had the Blues in seven.
And I got the Hawks in seven. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think, you know, when I talk about the points that I think are going to be the reason the Hawks win, it doesn't mean that the Blues are not going to be effective and difficult to play, and of course the Ryan Miller factor. I just don't understand why the Blues, when they went out to address an issue, essentially solely addressed goaltending and not scoring, because I just didn't see enough scoring. And I realized they were high in the standings and goal scoring all year, and they've struggled lately, and I think lately is a little bit more of a reflection of the talent level up front than is the course of the season. And I think it's going to be a heck of a series. But boy, it's going to be tough for one of those teams to go home after the first round after such a successful season. That somehow brings us to a close. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Time flew.
I want to quickly cheer Ryan Smith. He just retired.
Yes, we didn't have
time to get that in quickly. Great career. One of my favorite guys to watch over the years.
Yeah, that's the second half of the back-to-back on Hockey Night in Canada tonight. Ryan Smith's last game. A heart and soul guy. Thank our sponsors, CompuStitch Embroidery and Design, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Thank our guests who always join us for the preview shows, both regular season and playoffs, Kevin Allen of USA Today and Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail. I'd like to thank Timmy Devenham for doing a great job, as usual. Michael Remus for doing a terrific job. David Manuk of LegalCurve.com, who says tune into the website tomorrow for the Jets
exit interviews and all your Winnipeg Jets news and analysis. To Ezra Ginsberg, who brought his A-game today. For Drew Mindell, I'm Richard Pollock. We'll see you Wednesday for the final NHL midweek of the year. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.